And good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Curtain Call, where I spotlight the magic of theater one conversation at a time. And I'm your host, Tom Candela. Now, before we begin tonight's program, I do want to take a few moments here to remind you that this week, WJFF Radio Catskills Summer Fun Drive is in effect. Public radio exists because listeners like you believe that local voices, local stories, and community connections really do matter. So if you enjoy programs like Curtain Call and the many other voices you hear on WJFF, I hope you'll consider making a contribution to help keep community radio strong. You can make your donation anytime at WJFFradio.org, and I will thank you in advance for your support. Now, tonight's program is, in many ways, about the same spirit of community. Every theater has its stars, but every theater also has those extraordinary people whose names may not always appear in the lights, may not always be on the marquee, yet whose dedication, generosity, and love for the art make it possible for the curtain to rise. Tonight, we're going to celebrate one of those people. So rather than simply tell you about who Harold Tai is, let's introduce you to him the way most of us came to know him, through the stories of the people who shared the stage, the rehearsal hall, and friendships with him. So buckle up and prepare yourself for what's sure to be an emotional ride, because the tribute to Harold Tai begins right now. Tonight's episode is quite different than a lot of the episodes in the past. Community theater is built on volunteers. It's built on passion. It's built on people who give their evenings, weekends, talent, energy, patience, humor, and heart so that stories can come alive on stage. And every once in a while, a person comes along who becomes woven so deeply into the fabric of an organization that it's difficult to imagine that place without them. For the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop, one of those people was Harold Tai. Unfortunately, Harold passed away in November of 2025 after a life devoted not only to theater, but to teaching, to coaching, music, family, community service, and mentorship. Many local actors knew him as castmate, director, producer, carpenter, treasurer, set builder, or simply the person who always seemed to be there whenever something was needed to get done. Tonight, I have the pleasure of hosting many members of the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop, including some of Harold's family. Join me here on the show to talk about Harold, to tell some stories, to have some laughs maybe, reflections, memories, anecdotes. We're all going to focus on the legacy he leaves behind at the historic Rivoli Theater and beyond. My first two guests today are Pete Nastasi and Anna Paleo. Pete, Anna, welcome to Curtain Call.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Pleasure to be here.
Thank you. So, Pete, last time you were on the show, Harold was with you. Mm-hmm. And I remember Harold being a lot of fun. And he was a big advocate for theater in general.
Yes.
He was a big advocate for our theater community and is also well known by many of the actors that I have interviewed since, either worked with Harold in one capacity or another or got their start at the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop. Give us a sense of what this organization has meant to Sullivan County since 1950 when it was first made special.
Oh, my goodness. I think it's just a jewel of the county. When my wife and I moved up here, well, we had a summer place in 2006, And I saw that the Rivoli was still in operation, but now showing live theater, basically. Mm-hmm. I said, oh my goodness, we have to go. And since 06, we've patronized the theater and we've seen a tremendous amount of wonderful productions there. And Harold was always there.
Yep, yep.
Always. And I mean, the first time I saw him, he was in that little ticket booth there.
Now, Harold started somewhere around 2000, correct? Anna, how long have you been with the theater?
I started in 2018.
Okay.
So I show up for Shakespeare, Midsummer Night's Dream, and I see Harold and Amber Schmidt and have no idea what I'm doing. And that's part of the theme of Harold and I when I was painting sets. Do you know what you're doing? No idea, but we got stuff done. Anyway, he was my first director, and he really, truly made me feel at ease on the stage. I, again, knowing nothing about stage direction, which side is up and down and left and right. And he gave me a role. It was Tom Snout. We got to do artistic stuff together, ultimately. But I started in 2018, and I have been there since.
Okay. You mentioned Pete about him being at the ticket booth. I've seen him there, too, taking tickets, selling raffle tickets later on, mm-hmm. making introductions. And then you mentioned, Anna, about building sets and painting sets and props, which he was also very involved in, using his carpentry skills and things like that. How essential was Harold, Anna, behind the scenes?
So essential that there's such a huge hole in Left Behind. Mm. So he would create the set as an architectural situation on paper. And then he would say, now you speak with the director and we're going to paint.
Yeah.
And one day he just walks in and he says, you're the painting director. I'm like, what? And we built one set that was called A Lovely Day to Kill Your Spouse. We made the whole entire theater look like a beach scene.
Wow.
It was fantastic. And it was so much of Harold's skill to make this boat that looked like it was shaking and spouting water. And so
fantastic.
Harold was essential in so many places and so many aspects.
He often referred to himself as a crazy community theater guy. What did being a community guy mean to Harold, to Pete?
Every aspect of the community. Another incredible thing that Harold did for the community. He was involved with the Sullivan County Federation for the Homeless as well. So his community outreach extended far beyond just the theater. He was a teacher for a number of years, a coach, as Anna said, a mentor to an awful lot of people. And his absence has created a void that will be virtually impossible to fill.
Mm.
It's going to take about a dozen of us to do what Harold did, and probably not as well as he did it.
Yeah, it's big shoes to
tremendous,
fill. And
tremendous.
Probably not any one person can do it, because Harold was so committed to the theater and to his community that he filled many roles, and he did so lovingly, and he did so willingly, and he did so without thinking too much about himself a lot of times.
Oh, absolutely. Very understated. And one of my favorite things with Harold, I'd walk into the theater and he would be busy banging this or screwing that or painting this. And so I said, Harold, how are you doing? And his response almost always was, well, no one's yelling at me yet.
Oh, yes.
That was his fan.
Yes.
And so, well, all right. And then we spoke about so many things, Harold and I. We're both the former teachers. Harold taught science. I taught social studies. We always argued which subject was more important than the other.
Funny.
And we both commiserated with the inept New York Mets. After a game, I would get a text from him. He would get, can you believe this? You know, and so I certainly miss that. I really do.
So it seems like not only was he a coworker or a fellow theater person, but he was also a good friend to you, Pete.
Without a doubt. A very dear friend. Yeah. Yes.
You have a story? Yes. Please
go ahead.
My favorite
story,
Anna,
is something Harold would do was scream. Ready? Hold your ears. Loud noise. But it was too late. He had already dropped something from the upper level, a big piece of wood. So I just said, oh, God. So now I do that with my friends and family. I'm like, loud noise. It was such a pleasure. Such a pleasure to build and create.
Good story. Do you have one, Pete? Any one favorite Harold story that you'd like to share?
Well, it's a difficult story.
Okay.
You're okay with that?
Sure.
as many people in the workshop know, during my high school years, I unfortunately was repeatedly sexually abused by my high school football coach. And when I retired in 2012, I sought some counseling, and the person who was providing therapy for me suggested that I write to try to work through this. So it came out as a play, and I have no idea why I chose him, but the first person that I gave to read the script was Harold.
Wow.
And which I guess says a lot about
how you trusted him. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And so I said, I really would like to do this on stage at the Rivoli, and maybe due to the difficult nature of the play, we really had trouble casting it. And that really frustrated me. And Harold, without batting an eyelash, said, why don't you and I just do it?
Wow.
And I was, well, Harold, what do you mean? Well, just cut that guy out, and it'll just be the two of us in the hotel room rehashing things and all that. Ultimately, we did it as a one act, and I think what sums Harold up maybe better than anything, he knew it was important to me. And with Harold, if it was important to you, it was important to him.
Wow.
And if you're just joining us here on Curtain Call, I'm Tom Candela. We've been speaking with Pete Nastasi and Anna Palio. And today's show is all about Harold Tai. It is a salute to the memory of Harold. And we have many members of the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop in the studio with us today. And we're going to bring two more members in just a moment.
Talking with members of the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop. We have two more members, Jean Eifert and Amber Schmidt, in the studio with me. I'm going to start with you, Jean. What was the first time that you recall meeting Harold?
Well, it was interesting because it was during COVID.
Okay.
I had seen an advertisement in a local paper for auditions for It's a Wonderful Life. And
gosh,
you had to send a text, and there was a Zoom audition, which I did for Harold. He was the director, and he said, well, can you do any other voices? So I started doing all these different accents and different voices, and he said, well, I'll get back to you. And I heard from him the very next day, and he said, yes, I'd like you to play 8 characters.
Hence the many different voices.
Hence the many voices.
Wow.
So it was a lot of fun, and everything was done on Zoom. All the rehearsals were on Zoom, and then they recorded it on Zoom. He directed it over the airwaves, too. He would say, try this, try that. And it was an interesting experience, and he really made it a lot of fun.
Wow. So did the show eventually make it to the stage in some other format?
It was presented on Zoom.
Wow.
It was presented on Zoom.
And they had an audience that come and see
that? As far as I know. Okay. People tuned in. I couldn't see them, but I was hoping.
What an experience that must have been. So what was that like then, being directed by Harold?
It was very interesting. Yep. He seems to really knew what he wanted.
I see.
When he would say, try this, if it didn't work, he'd say, can you bring it down a little? Can you bring it up a little bit? He was very clear in his direction. So
great. How exciting. Talk about his role as a community member of other organizations.
Well, he was very involved with Literacy Center in Monticello, and he was also a teacher there, using his expertise from his own career as a teacher to help those who were interested in learning English and trying to get some basic skills down. And every year he would organize a benefit at the Rivoli through the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop for the literacy volunteers.
Amazing.
It was wonderful.
Amazing.
Now, I did meet Harold in person after our Zoom, and I had been looking for a volunteer opportunity in theater. So he sent out a notice that he wanted people to help on the set. So I said, okay, I'll volunteer. So I show up. I'm the only volunteer who shows up. And what does Harold have me do first? would you mind cleaning the bathrooms?
Oh, what was your thought when he said that? Did you think of exit stage left?
Actually, my thought was this must be how he indoctrinates all the new volunteers.
Amber, what about you? What was your first time that you met Harold?
The first time I met Harold was actually my first time at the Rivoli.
Okay.
My best friend's mom, she called me and she said, what are you doing? Nothing. Cool. Get dressed. We're going to the theater. Okay. Which is what happened. And we showed up and Harold was in there, shirt off, belly out, working on the set. It was, they were rehearsing Death Trap. I was 14 at the time, so.
So 14 was the first time when you saw him shirt off, belly out?
Yep. That must have been a shock.
It was. All us kids were just always on stage crew. We were building sets. We were painting. Harold was having us do all kinds of things that I'm not sure we were supposed to be doing. But he always encouraged us.
He always encouraged everyone to try. Give it a try. You can do it. He'd have his show tunes blasting while we sat there picking the paint colors or whatever. But he was always very encouraging and very respectful of everyone's level of expertise.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
And it was always, I don't know if I could do it. He said, yeah, you can. Or he'd say, all right, fine. Well, then do this then.
I'm glad that both of you were in shows or involved in shows, because I can ask this question, because oftentimes putting up a show is very chaotic.
Yep.
Right? There's lots of craziness going on, missed props, broken sets, costume disasters. How did Harold handle those moments?
He had his moments, like all of us, but he usually pulled it together. He'd figure it out and he would just fix it. He would just do it. We're doing notes or costumes or something, working on this or that, and he's in the background taking this person and that person to rebuild this. Hold that while I do this. And he was never just a sit around
kind
of guy.
Anytime we had like a mini disaster, like the handle come off something or you couldn't open this, Harold would always say, don't worry about it. I got it. I got this tool back here and I can do it. Or I've got this little thing to do. He always had the right thing.
Why'd you break my set?
Always.
Yeah. Every time. Yep.
That's very funny. Very funny. What would make Harold laugh?
I think just about anything would make him laugh.
Most things. And sometimes he would just... something would trigger a memory in his head, and he would just, he'd tell us, and he'd be, oh, this full belly laughter, and we're like, okay, sure.
Not that funny. Okay.
I don't get it.
I think unexpected things made him laugh the most, when he didn't expect this to happen, and it did.
Mm. Somebody pulls a voice out that you just didn't expect.
Or somebody started singing at the top of their lungs along with his show tunes. He loved that.
That's great. That's great. Do you have, Amber, a favorite Harold story that you want to share? Anecdote?
There's so many, but this is one of my favorites. We did Sister Act last year. His character, Ernie, spoiler alert, he dies very early in the show. But he came to me at rehearsal one and he said, I want to come back out at the end in a habit with the whole thing. So the whole thing, him coming out with the sparkles at the end, the habit, the cigar, the sunglasses, that was all his idea.
Love it.
He didn't want a lot of lines. He didn't want to memorize. Because as he would tell you, all of his lines are in the basement on the floor in a pile. He dropped them all. He always had a script in his pocket somewhere, somehow. But he loved being on stage. He may not always have acted like it, but he loved being on stage. And anything he could do to elevate the show, he was absolutely willing to do, no matter what it was.
Is there anything that you remember that Harold gave advice that really stuck with you?
He would say, just do your best. And I think that was important for people to hear from him.
Yeah.
And or he would be quick to give you positive feedback or constructive feedback.
Yes.
Which was very helpful. And I think to me, that was very important. You want to hone your own skills, but you need somebody to say, this is working. Keep doing this. Mm-hmm. And he was good at that.
Yeah. He was always honest, but never mean. Like, listen, I'm not a Princess Ariel, all right? I'm a flounder, and that's fine. But he was never like, you can't do that. It was more like you're a character actor. Embrace it. I'm a character actor. Just love it. Just do it.
I think his presence is so missed, you know, because he was always there. He was always there to help, always there to involve himself. If you said, Harold, I really can't find this, he'd say, I'll look. He'd be the one to run off and find it for you.
Wow.
Very, very
This is my
open.
First show without him.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's noticeable.
I'm sure it is. It has to be.
His presence is definitely missed.
Yeah.
And his good humor. And he loved to eat. So Amber talked about the belly, but every time I would come in, he'd say, "Jeannie, what did you bake today?"
Love it. Wonderful.
And he always said, "Theater is it's a team sport. Mm. We're all a team." And he was MVP.
Sure. That's a good way of putting him.
Yeah,
Harold Tye, MVP of the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop.
Absolutely.
Well, Jean, Amber, do appreciate you coming to speak about Harold today.
And we appreciate you giving us the opportunity.
You. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely. You're welcome. Back with two more guests of people who knew Harold very, very well. As I said, if you're just joining us, today's episode is a very special episode. This show is dedicated to the memory of Harold Tye, who served many roles at the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop. With me today is Eddie Wilson and Eileen Coulter. If you could just explain, Eileen, what your role at the theater was initially.
Yes, I came directly onto the board to help with fundraising.
Hmm.
And I really didn't have any experience whatsoever. And I ended up working with Barbara Newberg, who was one of the founders of the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop. And when she needed to give up the work, I took it over, and I needed a lot of help. And Harold was there for me.
Okay. It seems like this is a common theme that I'm finding with all the guests, their entrance into the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop of coming in with little to no experience in whatever they came in for, but being quickly accepted and welcomed by Harold into the family very quickly. Was that your experience?
Very much so.
Okay. What was that first meeting like when you met Harold?
Well, it's just a wonderful, welcoming feeling. He just accepted everybody and was there to help, whatever you needed.
Absolutely. If I remember correctly, because when Harold was on the show last year, he had mentioned about the purchase of the Rivoli. Do you know anything about that, Eddie? Do you remember? Were you involved?
I don't go that far back. Okay. I know Harold from the beginning, from when he did sales at our Bold Gold Media Group radio stations.
Oh, okay.
Of which I'm a part of.
Okay.
So I got to know him that way.
All right. So
initially, and then in a different venue path, I got into the Dramatic Workshop to a limited capacity, on a couple different levels, actually.
Okay.
Part of it was taking over from the previous production person as far as producing the commercials.
Mm-hmm.
After the 2019 season, I got the task of that and the bulk of what we do at Bold Gold Media Group, and especially not only the productions throughout every season, but the Haunted Theater.
Okay.
And so I would get this schedule of here's all the productions, try to find music that suits whichever show coming up and so on. I would always want to get those done first out of the way so that I could put myself with a lot of more time into getting the Halloween stuff done. But with Harold, he always lent his voice really to those commercials more than anyone I would think that I've worked with. And we, even to now, this season, have been able to keep his tagline, Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop, award-winning theater since 1950.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because he was particularly proud of that Halloween event. We talked a lot about that when he was here on the show and how that was well-known in the community and well-loved in the community. How involved were you in actually putting that up with Harold?
I went to it for the first time, I think, in 2016, and I decided to dress in costume.
Yeah, I'm sure he loved that.
I came as a Frankenstein character. I did the event and so on, and people were calling my name, and I said, "They know me?" And I wasn't scared. I got adrenalized all. I said, "This is great." Whatever. And so somebody said, "You should do this." And I did for several years after that, starting with like 2017. And I did it as late as 2023, I think it was, as a character actor. I mostly walked around, didn't have too much as far as anything scripted or whatever. So whether I was stationary as a headless horseman with a skeletal horse nearby. And then somehow I got roped into the 10-Minute Play Festival one season where I was a baseball coach, a high school kid who gets his girlfriend pregnant, and the girl is the coach's daughter. So it worked out. I don't know if I'd go back to a full-blown sort of kind of production in that respect. I'm more better heard than not seen kind of thing.
You're a radio guy.
That's my area. Yeah. Face for radio, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So he did, though, with the 10-Minute Play Festival, instruct me into how I was supposed to be delivering my lines to that effect, because I hadn't really done that. You want to be talking to the person in the back row.
Right.
So make sure you're projecting and you're overemphasizing your movements and your vocality and so on.
A great teacher.
So that was a piece of advice, obviously, that Harold gave you, Eddie, that stuck with you.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, definitely.
Yeah, that's great. Eddie used the term roped in. And I think, again, this is a common theme that I'm hearing a lot of people. They initially come to the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop for one reason, and they find themselves roped in, anything from cleaning bathrooms to building sets and painting to, as in Eddie's case, actually being on stage. Eileen, have you ever been roped in by Harold into any of these roles?
Many times. Yeah. Many times. Harold would come to the Haunted Theater in a half face mask from Phantom of the Opera.
Hmm.
And he was always the one who took tickets, but he asked me to take over the tickets.
Okay.
So very often on Fridays and Sundays, I would give him a break and he could do his thing and I would take tickets. But yeah, I got roped into a lot of stuff.
But it was always good, I'm sure. He always did it in a very positive way. It made you feel part of the team.
And not only part of the team, it made you feel like you're doing something important.
Can you tell me something about Harold that audiences don't know?
But just speaking for myself, there was one little thing that I realized at some point coming into radio, doing sales, and if he wasn't, you know, nobody else was coming through, he was prospecting, as he liked to call, with clients and so on. Whenever he came to the radio station to have a commercial, he would record a commercial. I swear he'd always bring something from Dunkin' Donuts. He was very hospitable that way and that kind of thing. And when he left you, it was always take the rest of the day off.
That's right. One of the most outstanding things I can talk about is when he took over the role of Tevye.
Yeah.
He did a wonderful job. The Tevye, the person who was cast for the role, his daughter was killed or died. And Harold stepped in.
Right.
So he had a little screen, a little prompter kind of thing going. Within days, he put a performance that was spectacular.
Wow.
Absolutely spectacular. And he did it in a few days, not the months that it ordinarily takes to put on a musical. So he was talented in that fashion. He was just a great guy.
And that's not a role with just lines, right? That's with major musical numbers involved.
Oh, yeah.
And he did list it as one of his favorite roles ever. Do you know why?
I really don't know, but the chemistry that he showed when he did his duet with his wife, who was Heather Strauss, it was amazing.
Mm.
They were a couple, and they really, the chemistry was, you could feel it.
On that note, too, he always did well with whatever I may have seen him in productions, whether it's for the holiday or something during during a regular season. He was top-notch, for sure.
Yeah.
And God only knows how much time, and others have probably said it, time, hours, days, whatever, to do the set-building things that he did. There's stuff I just don't know that how much he did.
He spent hours and hours in that building by himself very often, and he became a master set builder.
Yeah, the painter, set builder,
everything.
Ticket taker, raffle seller, concession stands.
Singer.
He really did it.
He did.
In addition to all these things that we're talking about now, family was also very important to him. Can you speak a little bit about that, about the importance of his family and how supportive they were of him?
It's hard. Everybody knew Lillian, and he brought Lillian into the theater a couple of times. She was on our board for a short time.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine much of the family life because he spent more than half of his time in the Rivoli building.
Sure, sure. Well, you were certainly, all these folks that are here today are part of his family, yourselves included.
Oh, absolutely. Oh. We talked about the Rivoli and the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop as being a great big dysfunctional family, but a family.
Just the same. And it's really nice to see the turnout that we have for him today. It really shows how much he was loved and honored by the people he worked with. He's done such accomplishments again, not only in the theater at Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop, but his work outside the theater and teaching and mentoring.
And the Federation as well. Because that would come up. He would be in with Kathy Kreider from the Federation for the Homeless to record the commercial for them. And so he was involved in so many things that just wondered how somebody could do all this stuff.
Forrestburg.
And Forrestburg.
He performed on stage in Forrestburg.
Performed on stage in Forrestburg.
With Loretta Swit, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
Yeah. Did he have any stories about that at all?
None that he told me.
None? Because I heard stories about her, but, it's the other stories, not from Harold and certainly not anything I'd probably say on the air. But anyway, you want to give us that show tag?
Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop, award-winning theater since 1950.
There you have it, folks. Okay, thank you so much. We've been talking with Eddie Wilson and Eileen Coulter, two members of the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop in one way, shape, or form, and who knew Harold well and are here today to honor his memory. Thank you so much for joining me today on Curtain Call.
Thanks, Tom.
And you've been listening to Curtain Call. I'm Tom Candela, your host. We are remembering this evening the life and legacy of Harold Tye. And we'll continue our conversation with members of the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop in just a moment. I'm going to share some more stories and memories and reflections on a man whose generosity and passion helped shape community theater throughout our region. But first, a brief reminder that this is WJFF Radio Catskills Summer Fun Drive. And public radio, as I said before, and programs like Curtain Call that you're listening to right now are made possible by listeners like yourself who believe local stories and community voices deserve to be heard. So if you'd like to support the work we do here at WJFF, please do consider making a contribution at WJFFradio.org. Now we're going to take that break, I promise. Then when we come back, we're going to speak with Harold's wife and daughter, Lillian and Julie. Stay with us. We'll be right back for more of this special Harold Tye tribute on Curtain Call.
Weekend of chamber music's 33rd season, My Brother's Keeper. 500 years of music born of compassion and the struggle for justice starts this week with three events at Catskill Art Space. 7:30 Thursday evening, an evening of music and conversation with composer-in-residence Trevor Weston. Friday at 7, a free open rehearsal. And Saturday at 7:30, it's the music of Weston, Wagoner, Shefsky, and Mendelssohn with a pre-concert chat at 6:30. Info at wcmconcerts.org.
It's Radio Catskills Summer Fun Drive. Become a sound supporter with a recurring donation of $20, $30, $40 a month or more. Give now at WJFFradio.org or on the Radio Catskill mobile app.
Okay, well, we're back and we've been talking a lot about Harold Tye today. This is a special edition of Curtain Call. I welcome now into the studio Harold's wife, Lillian Tye, and his daughter, Julie. I want to thank both of you for taking the time to coming out to join me and the rest of his extended family here of the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop to honor Harold in this way. I didn't know him that well. I met him mainly when we had our interview here the first time. And we had a great conversation between me, him, and Pete. By the end of it, he was trying to recruit me into the theater. He was like, well, you're a theater guy, right? And I said, yeah. He goes, I'm going to get you on the stage soon. And I was like, well, maybe. We'll see. But from talking to all the people that are here today, we got an idea of just how much he was involved with the theater company. Your dad had a way of bringing in people, whether or not they thought they had the skills. He was a man that found skills within everybody or found something that everyone could contribute, whether it be acting or whether it be building a set or whether it be taking tickets or selling concessions or building a costume or any of those things. So he spent a lot of time there. As
you could say so.
Yeah.
My mother might be a little bit of a theater widow.
She may be a theater widow as well.
Before she became an actual widow. Yeah.
So what lessons do you think that he brought, aside from the theater lessons and being a director, that he brought into the community?
I think about the fact that my dad was a coach first, before he got involved in theater at all. Mm-hmm. And really, a coaching is about putting a team together. And to your point about people's different talents, right? It's you have to put all those pieces together in order to have a team that works well, right? And play on different people's strengths. And I think he really brought that in. And I think he appreciated that the theater helps you tell those stories from everybody's different perspective. And I think he really liked the idea of like being a little bit outside of yourself.
Sure.
Right? At home, I think my dad was a little bit more of an introvert than he was certainly outside, which is not uncommon.
Yeah.
People are often a little bit different in different
settings. Sure.
And so being a part of community, I think, has always been something that he's done.
Yeah. You bring up a very interesting point, Julie, about how there seems to be a thread through all of these activities that your dad had in his life, and not just the theater, but being a mentor, being a teacher, being an advocate. Do you find that the theater sort of connected those threads in any way?
All of those threads came. He was just so super involved in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be an actor, he'd be a director, he'd be a producer, he'd be a set builder. He sold tickets. He did whatever needed to be done.
Sure.
And then he tried to incorporate as many people as possible into the whole process, which is essential.
Yeah.
There's just so much to be done. So he was so involved, and I think it brought together all of the things that my daughter just said.
Yeah.
Involved with community, involved with the theater, involved with church. So.
Yeah, but he was certainly out there.
Yes.
All the time.
Yep.
And the feeling I'm getting from just everybody who spoke of him just now, each one of them had a story of how Harold lifted them up in one way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. Whether it be somebody who lacked confidence coming into the theater or somebody who didn't know how to wield a hammer, Harold found a way to tap into their talent and to tap into what they were capable of, and not only tap into it as a way to use that, but tap into it as a way to make them feel good about themselves.
I actually think that started for him a long time ago. Theater is something that he came into later in life.
Yeah.
Right? Far before this, you would see that kind of personality trait in his teaching. And I think he really tried to figure out with students how to get the best out of them, and knowing that different students had different strengths and different opportunities and different paths that they were going to follow in life. And I think he really found a way to help identify what that was and to help them internalize that, which isn't always easy. High school is a difficult time for a lot of people.
Sure.
Whereas like the theater came later.
Yeah, go ahead. Do you want to say something?
I was just going to say that
Please.
He actually, two things. First of all, his first play he was in was Our Town.
Mm.
And I forget what his role was, but I think it was like there's like a narrator person.
Yeah, the stage manager.
So, okay.
Yeah.
So he was
Ironic.
That. Mm-hmm. And I think that is what got him involved in theater. But as far as his leadership.
At the high school. Right?
At the high school.
Yeah. Right.
When we were in college, this is how I met him. We were at a group of people that were Catholic, and it was just like a fun way for people to get together. So he would be the one in charge. So he would be making announcements, and I was there listening. I was like, oh, he's cute. But then we go that far back, as far as I know, for him having those leadership qualities and getting people to help do stuff. So I think that's part of what's involved him in coaching so much, involved him in being in theater so much. I think that's those are some of the threads you're talking about that ran through all of his life.
Well, he took it on. Even if he didn't know how to do it, he'd figure out a way how to do it. And a lot of people spoke about if things got broken or a set piece or a prop missing or somebody not being able to be on the cast, suddenly he took on that role, namely Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof.
Yes, yes. He actually became Tevye only because the actor that was supposed to be Tevye had to drop out for a major reason.
Yes.
So then he took it over. I couldn't tell you why he loved it that much.
Okay.
But I do know this, that when we were in the hospital and he was not feeling good and he was not doing well at all, we tried to find something to keep them alert and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
We put on the music from Fiddler on the Roof. And he was like happy.
His feet were like dancing when he wasn't really
Is that right?
He wasn't terribly communicative at that point, but his feet were like dancing.
Wow. So we knew that he was enjoying it. Yeah.
And that he was listening.
Yes. That, and that he could actually hear it.
That's a beautiful story.
Yep.
That's a beautiful story.
I think, again, the storytelling about life is really what the theater does. And I'm always, we would go to the theater in the city mostly, and he would be looking at the stagecraft in a way that.
Is that right?
The average theater goer does not, right? He'd be like, oh, look at how they moved their sets around.
Yes, yes, yes. That was definitely. We'd go to a show, and I'd be listening for what they're singing about and talking about. And he's looking at the set saying, oh, we could do that.
Or how did they build that?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Did you find that he would take those lessons and bring them into the theater, Lillian?
Sure.
Yeah? Yeah.
Absolutely. Great. I think another aspect of what Julie was talking about is he came from a big family.
Mm-hmm.
He was the oldest boy. And so that was part of him developing the leadership, I think.
And his father died relatively young.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was a little bit more like the big brother in a more meaningful way.
So he was a leadership role also in the family is what you're telling me as well.
Yep.
Indeed.
Yeah. What is something that the folks in the other room right now might not know about Harold that you do know?
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that they don't know is how Harry and I met. We met when I was a freshman in college and he was a junior. So all of our cards said, to my frosh. He would call me his frosh.
Oh, his frosh.
So that was sweet, like our entire married life. That's how he would address things to me.
Oh.
And so eventually got married. We ended up eventually moving to Monticello to Conneaugh Lake. And we were there for 28 years. And then we moved into the Regency in Monticello so that we could get away from him having to do all the shoveling and all the raking and all the painting and all the stuff you have to do to maintain a house. So he was very happy to leave there.
And he went to the theater to do it all.
Exactly. That's true. That's true.
How about you, Julie? Something that you know about your dad that you would like to share that the folks don't know about?
I don't know if they don't know it, but he used to say that his biggest failing as a parent is that I'm a Yankees fan.
That you're a Yankees fan. Well, I am too, fan. So I think he did pretty well there.
Yeah, okay. Well, he's a Mets fan.
I know.
You know, he taught in my high school. He was never my teacher, but he taught in my high school, and we drove to school together, and he was my coach.
Mm-hmm.
And we had many father-daughter moments on the field that perhaps the average coach and pitcher might not have. But I do remember how proud he was when the newspaper stopped referring to me as Coach Ty's daughter as being the pitcher, and when it became pitcher Julie Ty's father was the coach.
I love that story.
Yeah.
I love that story about the changing of the guard almost.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. And we, you know, we love to play golf. I was always surprised. I'm not surprised they ended up at the condo in Arizona. I am surprised we didn't end up with a condo in Myrtle Beach because we used to go there a lot to play golf when I was in an earlier time.
Is there anything else you'd like to share about your dad or about your husband that we haven't touched on?
No, we appreciate you doing this podcast about him and the role he played here in Sullivan County. It's the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop in particular. When I work around politics and government, and he was like, I need to know Aileen Gunther more. And she ended up helping to get more funding to help support the theater. And he was with the Sullivan County Federation for the Homeless. And we had some conversations about like how government grants work in that space, and tried to help him based on the relationships I have in politics. So he was really committed to trying to give back to the community and for those who were less fortunate, but also to get people more engaged with community theater. So he had a big impact, and
he did.
And
yeah, absolutely.
We were fortunate to get an extra almost 19 years when he had gotten a liver transplant, and we're so grateful for organ donation, for what that has done for our family. And certainly we encourage people to support organ donation. New York actually has really low participation in organ donation relative to other states, and there are a lot of people can benefit from that. So certainly we would encourage people to sign up with the DMV.
Yeah.
Not that hard. And certainly when my dad passed away, he was also able to donate some things.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So it's it was really meaningful for us to get those almost 20 years.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the incredible thing, get a liver transplant because of an inherited
disorder.
Thing. We would go back down to Westchester Medical Center where he had the transplant done, and they would always be so amazed at how well he was doing. Totally amazed, until finally, like the summer before last, when things started to get a little rocky and they had to do a biopsy and do some other stuff as far as his liver was concerned. But he was successful at it. Look at everything that he did with his life after having had this transplant.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just an amazing thing. So we're definitely grateful for his transplant, whoever his donor was. We're definitely totally grateful for that. And happy that he was able to make the decision that when he passed away, he definitely wanted to donate whatever they could possibly donate or get from his body. So that's what he did. And that's the kind of person that he was.
So even in his death, he continued to give.
Absolutely. Yeah. And before he had gotten sick, he's O negative, and he used to give blood a lot.
Yeah, the universal donor, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's another very easy thing for people to do. And with whole blood, platelets, plasma, that's all really important and not that hard to do.
And so as you see, listeners, that a simple tick on your driver's license can change a person's life, but not only a person's life, but can change the family's life and can change all these other people that are now sitting outside in the green room here at Radio Catskill and everybody who experienced the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop, everybody who worked with Harold in some capacity, the advocacy that he did for the homeless, the advocacy he did for his students, the mentorship, the teaching, all these things came out of somebody ticking that on their driver's license, being able to give Harold at that time of crisis a new liver, and that brought all these great things from that. It's a good way to end this conversation. I really appreciate both you, Lillian and Julie, joining us today for this tribute to your dad and your husband. Everyone here loved the man, and he will be missed. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you're just joining us, this special edition of Curtain Call has been dedicated to Harold Tye, a man of many, many faces, many hats, many abilities of the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop. We're back in the studio now with Pete Nastasi and Amber.
Yes.
Amber Schmidt. Okay. So we're back now. We're going to talk a little bit about the upcoming season for the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop, because that's what Harold would have wanted us to speak about.
Yes.
More so probably than him.
For sure.
He would have wanted us to talk about what's happening and to get audiences interested in the upcoming season. So right now you're in the middle of the plays in development, correct? Or is that done now?
We just finished.
You finished that. All right. So how did that go this year? How many plays did you have?
It actually was pretty well received and fairly well attended. We did 7 short plays, some 10 minutes, some one act, and with a Q&A afterwards, which was very nice. And it was very well received. And as a matter of fact, a couple of the productions did indeed win Taney's Award.
Oh, nice.
So, so we're very pleased about that.
They come to see the shows? Is that how it works?
They come to every show,
they
actually.
They come to every show?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
That's great.
We won for one of the performances was How Engelbert Humperdinck Changed My Life. That was the title. And Jean is the playwright, and she won for playwriting.
Wonderful.
And Pam Licconi won for, she acted. She was the actress in the play. And we had another one.
She won excellence in acting.
Excellence.
I want to make sure
acting.
I point that out. Excellence.
Good.
It's meritorious excellence and outstanding.
Nice.
So excellence is pretty good.
Yeah. The Q&A, which is always a big important part, right?
Mm-hmm.
Speak to that a little bit, Amber, how important that is for audience members to actually to speak out and have that opportunity to talk about the show.
Usually we don't really know how they feel at all, because they say, hey, nice job, and they leave, and that's it. So something like plays in development, being able to ask them, did it make sense to you? What did you feel? And to hear them say, I didn't understand what was happening. It gives the playwright a little bit to work on, to say, all right, they didn't get that. So it's really nice to be able to actually sit down, basically one-on-one with the audience, and say, what did you actually see here? and be honest with us.
Yeah, it's helpful.
The whole thing is a great experience, and especially to be able to talk to the audience because they're the ones you're doing this for.
Right.
And last year was the first time that we actually did it. And because it is community theater, I think it should be an incubator for new works. Yeah. And an incubator to get people on stage who maybe had never been on stage before. So we're really pulling the curtain back and letting the audience essentially see a rehearsal, really, if you think about it. We did it last year for the first time. It was very well received, and I believe it was very well received again this year. So it looks as though it's going to be something that we do each and every year. And I really think it's a valuable addition to our season.
Good. Well, that's a good point. So if a playwright's sitting out there listening now and wants to have their play submitted for next year, how do they go about doing that?
Well, we're going to announce that for the upcoming season. We do put that on our website that we're looking for plays, one acts, 10 minute, whatever. Last year when we did it, we opened it up worldwide, really.
Nice.
We got so many submissions that it became overwhelming. So we decided this year, you know what? Let's feature our local people.
That's
so
great.
Sullivan, Ulster, Orange, Pennsylvania. And we got plenty of submissions again, and we culled it down to 7 that we thought were appropriate. But with feedback to the playwrights who were not chosen, that just because it wasn't chosen this year, resubmit it or maybe tweak it here and there, resubmit it. And so I think it's something we're going to be doing in perpetuity.
That's great. So for the folks listening out there, where do they go? What is your website that just, if they don't already know it, they can look it up and.
SCDW.net, correct?
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Correct.
There you go. All right, so we have that, the plays in development. What comes on after that?
We have Jekyll and Hyde, the musical.
Oh, that's big time. Tell us a little bit about that.
The music is just unlike anything else. It's just so good. It's beautiful. The cast is absolutely amazing, and that is being put on with Epiphany Shakespeare Company.
Oh.
So we've brought them in to direct this musical, and they're also going to be in it. And it really is, we've got our regular workshop people and then their regular Epiphany people together. And it really is just an incredibly talented cast. And we are all very excited. And that opens July 10th.
This is a great idea to bring in another company with your company to extend your family.
Yes.
And also bringing other talent in as well, because it's a rather large cast, right, Jekyll and Hyde?
I think 15 to 18,
yeah,
I think.
That's a big, so, yeah, that's a big cast.
That's quite big cast.
That's a big cast, you know, with the chorus and everything else. So musically, are you building a pit, or is it you got people coming in for that?
We have a conductor, and she found a pit.
Wow.
Yes.
That's exciting.
Yes.
Wow. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
It's always the first rehearsal with a pit is always very exciting.
Wow. That's really neat. So you guys are growing. You are.
We're constantly evolving.
Evolving. That's a good word.
The little engine that could.
Wow.
Every year brings a new challenge, and every year we figure it out.
Keep plugging away.
Harold would be very proud.
The show must go on.
Yes. No doubt about it.
Very proud of what you guys are doing and how you continue his legacy and the legacy of the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop. After that, anything in August?
Yes, How to Train Your Dragon, the musical junior. That's with our junior company. And that opens August 14th to the 16th. And then the next weekend, 21st to the 23rd. I do not know. I know that the junior company is very excited to be putting it on.
Yeah.
And again, it's community theater. Actually, to quote Harold, this is perfect. When something occurred that maybe shouldn't have occurred, or we're learning, or gee, I don't know how to do that. Harold would always say, why do you think we have workshop in our title? And that's exactly what community theater is all about. How are people going to cut their teeth? How are these young people going to get on stage? Here it is. And that's why it's so important for the community to please come out and support this venture. No one gets a dime on our end mm-hmm. doing this. If anything, it really costs a pretty significant amount of money to be involved in this.
Just for the rights for that show, I'm sure.
For the rights. Yep. So please come out and see us. Then come September, we have A Midsummer Night's Dream. I think, who wrote that?
Bill something?
I think so.
Bill Shatner, maybe?
I
believe last time we did that, I believe you played Puck.
I did.
How about that?
I'm surprised.
A memorable performance.
Yes.
So,
I remember the auditions for that distinctly.
I take it you are going to be involved with this yet again?
I do plan on auditioning.
So very ambitious season, I might say.
This is just the season. This isn't even all the special events we're doing outside of that.
Well, I know the big thing that Harold loved, and he talked a lot about it when he was on the show, was the October big event.
Yes.
Your haunted theater.
Legendary.
Yes. Legendary,
haunted
truly.
Theater. Absolutely. Yes.
I won't even walk through it myself. I refuse because I'm a scaredy cat.
I'm the kind of person, too, is like, I don't want people jumping up at me.
Right. Yeah. But if that is a concern to anyone who wants to go, all you have to do is give us a heads up.
Yes.
And you can take the modified theater tour. But I probably shouldn't say this, but the Rivoli is kind of creepy sometimes.
It's a little spooky on its own, yes.
And so we have that going for
us. It has character.
We have character, that's a good word.
Yes.
But
yes.
To transform it into a creepy environment mm-hmm. is easy because we have a lot of creepiness
built in already.
So,
it really is.
Especially for the price. I mean, you know, because some of these haunted theater tours elsewhere, they charge you a fortune. Mm-hmm. And we've had many patrons over the years say, we spent 3 or 4 times elsewhere, and this one is better.
Well, I think Harold would be very proud and happy to hear of what you guys are doing, and you continue his legacy.
Right. Well, that's how we live on with our legacy.
From everyone I talked to today, it doesn't sound like he had a disappointment bone in his body when it came to this.
Not at all. At all. A true labor of love.
It was always, next time we'll do it better.
Yeah. And lift people up and support them. And it's really, really wonderful. I'm glad we did this.
Likewise.
All right, Pete, thank you so much.
Tom, thank you so much.
Thank you for today.
Great. Thank you, Tom.
Well, if tonight's conversation has shown us anything, it's that every community theater has someone like Harold Tye. It's a person who gives far more than anyone ever sees. My sincere thanks to all our guests for sharing their memories, their laughter, and their hearts with me this evening. Harold's legacy lives on not only in the productions he helped bring to life, but in the countless people he encouraged, inspired, and welcomed into the theater family. Now, before we say goodnight, I'd like to leave you with one final reminder that this week is WJFF Radio Catskills Summer Fun Drive. Just as community theater depends on people who believe in the power of the arts, public radio depends on listeners who believe local stories and local voices matter. If you enjoyed tonight's program, I hope you'll consider supporting WJFF with a gift at wjffradio.org. I'm Tom Candela. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting the arts. And thank you for supporting WJFF Radio Catskill. Have a good night, everybody. I'll see you at the theater.
We've just marked 1 year since Congress voted to eliminate federal funding for public media. NPR and this station remain committed to informing the public. But a free press doesn't just happen. It's something we need to protect. Without federal funding, we are relying on your support now. Don't wait. Make your gift. And thanks so much.
Radio Catskill belongs to all of us. Help keep it here for everyone. Give now at wjffradio.org or on the Radio Catskill app. Wherever you go, take Radio Catskill with you. Stream your favorite shows, music, and podcasts anytime, anywhere with our new and improved app. Stay connected with local news and national headlines all in one place. You can even send us your thoughts with the Talk to Us feature, audio or video, right from your phone. No radio? No problem. Just press play. It's Radio Catskill right in your pocket. Download the app today on iPhone or Android.
WJFF Jeffersonville. From river to river, mountain to mountain, we are Radio Catskill.